So I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I wanna be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And
this is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm Andre 3000, Andre Benjamin, Three Stacks, Three, whatever you want to call me. It does not matter at this point.
What's good, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I have no complaints, man. Just happy to be here alive and considered, you know?
Well, we're happy that you considered rocking with Microphone Check. It's, you know, really happy to have you here.
Well, thank you, man. I mean, it is a honor. Thank you very much.
So, just a moment ago, I want to go back, because you just said something that bugged me out.
Mm-hmm.
You're working with Aretha Franklin. You don't have to talk about it, but
Yeah, that's no problem at all, man. It trips me out, too, still, when I think about it.
You playing piano with her?
No, I wish I was playing piano. I'm not that good at all, man. But Kevin Kendrick's, the piano wizard Kevin Kendrick, is actually playing on the song. And she's doing a new album, where she's doing like diva hits. So she's doing, it's like a covers album. Mm. And we actually picked a song. We picked a Prince song. And she killed it.
Of course.
And, you know, we just finished the song about a week and a half ago in Detroit. And it was just amazing to, you know, be able to sit in a room with a lady that's been there since the 60s, you know, killing it.
What was that like in terms of like phone call or just the idea of, you know, when you knew that was going to happen? Like, what went through your mind?
It's kind of weird because I hadn't been on the scene, you know, producing, you know, since I've produced Outkast records. You know, so it's not like I'm a hot producer or anything right now. I have all, you know, hits on the radio. So when I got the call, I was honestly surprised. Clive Davis, he just reached out of nowhere and said, hey, you know, we're doing this Aretha album and I want you to, you know, work on it. And I was kind of like happy, like grateful, you know, I'm like, hell yeah, I'll try it. And so, you know, he gave me the freedom to pick, you know, which song that, you know, we wanted to cover. And we went through a few songs and Aretha had to agree mm-hmm. on the songs. And we finally settled on Nothing Compares to You, which is a Prince song. And it's a completely different take on the song. It doesn't sound like... It doesn't sound like any other of the... It doesn't sound like the Prince version. It doesn't sound like the Sinead O'Connor version either. But it's Aretha in a different element, but something she's familiar with. Mm-hmm. But it was really, really fun doing it. And just to hear her use her voice like this instrument, she just came in the studio and really just knocked it out in about an hour.
Mm.
Like, I think it was about an hour, yeah.
Have you ever seen her perform?
I've never seen her perform ever in my life. You know, if my mom was still around, she'd probably trip that I was in the studio with Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, I'm tripping.
Yeah. And
I'm sure your mom is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight at the same time.
Okay.
And with the Isley Brothers, I don't even know what it was just one of those weird moments of, like, it was put together as, like, the oldies kind of a show in New York City.
Yeah.
At Madison Square Garden. And for the life of me, I just was like, I want to go see that.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the Isley Brothers before, but never Gladys Knight.
Yeah.
And never Aretha. So it just blew my mind.
Yeah, I can imagine just in the studio working with it. Like, as soon as she got on the microphone and started warming up, just doing, you know, her little runs, I was sitting there, like, smiling from ear to ear, like, I'm actually in the studio recording Aretha Franklin. Yeah, it was amazing.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about that feeling that people have when they meet their idols, their legends, the people that, like, kind of throw them back a little bit.
Right.
How do you feel when people approach you like that?
It's a weird feeling, but then it's such a gracious feeling, you know, because I know, just being a human being, that we're all really just human beings and kind of acting on stuff that we just tried to do from high school, so we all know that. It's like you're just messing around and trying to make something cool, and you know, you look back 20 years later or look forward 20 years later and people are, you know, talking about it in a certain kind of way. It's actually fun because I'm actually standing outside of it, looking at other people talk about it, because I'm outside of it too now, because when we were doing it, we were in it, you know. You weren't worried about, you know, what people are talking about in that way. You're just kind of having fun. You're in the studio, and your whole focus is doing this music. So when it's years later, it's kind of like you're kind of removed from it and kind of stepping outside of yourself looking at it. So it does feel kind of weird, like talking about a third person.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand it because I'm a fan of music, so I look at others in the same way. And, you know, just hanging out with, you know, people that I love. I mean, you know, we're sitting here with Ali, and, you know, still to this day, a tribe has been... y'all can't hear my smile right now.
They can.
But man, like in high school, man, you just don't understand how much that meant to me. So when I met you guys, man, it was just crazy. Still to this day, I'm like, wow, these are the guys that really, you know, turned me on to this thing, you know. So I understand what it means to be a fan and into somebody else's music. So I kind of like, I just take it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What about the additional, I don't know, maybe it's, is it a burden, maybe it's not, of representing a city? I mean, Tribe has had that in some ways also, but I understand when you were starting out, you may not have thought about, like, I need somebody to rep my city, especially where hip-hop is right now. Was that conscious?
Yes. As a crew, we knew in our heads that we definitely want to represent the city, and not just the city, we want to represent the Southern lifestyle. You know, it was strategic in naming the album Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music, you know, because we knew, we all grew up on New York hip-hop, and, you know, I remember being in the 8th and 9th grade, and, you know, we were so into New York hip-hop that we had learned the accents and everything and trying to, you know, imitate,
right,
you know, New York hip-hop. That's just how it was. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, punk bands trying to imitate English accents to do a certain authenticity, but you kind of grow from that. And so the first album, you know, when we were jumping into it as a crew, we knew what we had to represent. And it was a big part, you know, to make sure the city was on our back at the same time, because, you know, before then we did have great talent coming out of the city, but not in a, you know, quote unquote hip hop, you know, kind of form. You know, we had great artists from TLC to, you know, to Crisscross and, you know, those kind of acts. But it was something a little bit different when we came. So we were just happy to be a part of it. We're just happy to, as a crew, you know, just to have something to say and to look at people from the city and, you know, they have pride in their chest and stick their chest out a little bit different now because Atlanta kind of means something. So that was a big part of what we were doing.
What does Atlanta and Southern culture mean to hip hop? Like, why is it necessary?
I look at it like this, and, you know, this is just my opinion. I think it's one of those places where, because we didn't grow up in New York, because we didn't grow up on the West Coast, we had time to soak both of those things in. And because no one expected anything from the South except, you know, maybe fast, you know, Boudiché club music, mm-hmm. you know. So the door was wide open, so we had an open palate. And one thing I can say about Atlanta is you can do anything from Atlanta. Like, I think it would have been harder for us to come out from New York because they would have expected us to do a certain thing. We would have to be bound to a certain thing. We have to rap a certain way, you know. So I think Atlanta is almost like a freedom land because we had no ties to anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just open, like open feel.
Mm-hmm. What was your experience of Outkast, like when you first heard them?
I thought it was something from like the Bay or something.
Right, but it's rightly so though, and I have to. You know, give a shout out to the Hieroglyphics crew, mm-hmm. and Souls of Mischief, because as kids we were hugely influenced by them. Like, they actually, like when it comes to rap, I would say, you know, Tribe and Hyro, mm-hmm. And Dos FX, people don't mention them a lot, but like to me it was about who had the most interesting things, interesting flows. And when it came to that, you know, Tribe had their thing, Hyro had their thing, Dos FX had their thing that was different from everybody else. So, you know, when we came out, you definitely could hear the West Coast influence in our rhymes.
Yeah, but there was something else to it, you know, and I couldn't figure it out until, like, I bought the album and I just was, like, blown away. You know, hearing Outkast, to me, it didn't sound foreign. It sounded familiar.
Right.
And wholesome and good. So, I just roll with it, and it's funny, one of my favorite songs is Mainstream. Like, it's
yeah,
it's just, I don't know what it is about that song, that's just, everything is just so colorful and just feeling and just takes you on a journey.
They sworn diving. If their name be Gretchen von Ivan. Phone call rushing to finish their album. Did you find them? Lost dog pedaling, backstroking. What done happened? Deep rhyme, the catch of the day. When the recipe called for black and wrong ingredients. Maybe too much herbs and spices. Maybe you got hungry for the wrong dish of them greens. And it's enticing how them Jones to sing. So I'm gonna sing just like them to get where they at. I'll even break my back to touch their rim. If I gotta, my ultimata be that I follow. I bite whatever that's looking tasty. Water it down and then swallow. I hope you vomit. Won't call no names cause that's not my job. It just applies to who been making. You know who you are, but if you don't, you never will. You just proceed to steal. But then it might get ugly, cause trust me, niggas do feel the way that I felt when I wrote this. But we must stay in focus. Be kings and queens up in this thing. Get rid of all them jokers. Face down, face down, face down.
Think it is what it ain't, all pieces of cream. That's why some of our folks face down in the mainstream.
That's one of my favorites as well, man. Just the way it was put together, I think Organized Noise, man, that was kind of like one of their shining moments, you know, when it came to production. Even just that time signature was just, you know, it was everything to me, you know. Yeah, that was second album.
Yeah. How do you deal with, do you consciously focus on going outside of like regular 4/4, or you just seem really just open and just going with it? So I'm just curious as to like the method.
I'm open. As a producer, I didn't start producing until the second album. Our entire first album was produced by Organized Noise. You know, but me personally as a producer, I'm just looking for the next thing that's going to excite me, you know. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be a certain thing. It has to always be moving forward, I say for myself. It just has to be new to me. It doesn't even have to be new to you. Mm-hmm. You know, just new to me. And at that point, I get excited, and that's kind of the fuel of what it is. Time signatures, I love when I hear different time signatures. And it's funny you say that, because I had to tell Aretha Franklin that she, the song Say a Little Prayer, had a lot to do with the song Hey Ya. Mm-hmm. They're similar, and it's hard to explain, but listening to that song, the way the loop comes back around, mm-hmm. Is kind of how I devised Hey Ya. You know, and I had to tell her that she is a big part of that song. I remember finishing Hey Ya and, you know, letting Big Boy and Killer Mike hear it. You know, they were riding in the car, and you know, they were digging it like really hard. And I think Killer Mike, I think he wanted to rap on it at the time, and I knew, you know, Killer Mike would kill it, but I knew it would make it different. It would make it a different kind of song. Mm. You know, at that point, it would make it a rap song, and I didn't want it to be a rap song because I think it would have been put in a different category. And that time signature, I would have liked to hear, you know, what a rhyme would sound like on that time signature, you know?
Well, your cadence and flows, you move around, you know, you go in between a rhythm. So that's why I was just curious about your approach, you know, in putting together songs. But speaking of merging genres, because that's how I take it, how important is that as, you know, coming from representing Atlanta hip hop, you know, and putting a stamp on it, but then moving beyond that label?
I think here's my thing about representing a place. The best way to represent a place is where you're from is be yourself completely and just say, I'm from this place. Like, it doesn't mean I have to cater to that place, you know, because my thing is taking the city on its back and going beyond. It's not staying in just in the city sound, you know. My thing is just pushing it as much as I can, because that's what gets me off. That's what I do, you know. But when you listen to Atlanta music now, you know, you listen to trap music, we didn't necessarily come from that, but I love that kind of music,
right?
You know, and it's funny, like people say, you know, Outkast has, you know, this Atlanta Southern sound. I honestly don't think we ever had an Atlanta sound. I think our accents were from the South. You know, mm-hmm. people knew we were from the South. But I can't say that we just had a Atlanta sound. You know what I mean? I think ours was just all over the place. It was kind of like a hodgepodge of, you know, whatever we were into.
But I just, as an outsider, it was something new, you know? So it seemed like you established it. You know what I mean? Like, it became, it's your sound.
Yeah, I think that's what it's about. You know, it's about finding your own thing and adding it to the pot, you know? And we are influenced. You can hear Atlanta sound in it, but it's like we don't want to stay there. You know what I mean? It's more important for us to push it, you know?
Yeah.
Me as an individual, I get off on that. Like, if I'm not pushing it or myself, I kind of feel like, well, what am I doing? Because there's so many great people that can do that thing so much better than I can do it, mm-hmm. you know? So why sit there, you know? But I know I'm good at pushing it.
We like it when you push it.
Well, thank you, man. I feel best when I'm doing that, you know?
I identify with that.
You know?
I feel caged when I can't just play whatever I want to play, be it from the, you know, the DJ pit or just at the drum machine. It's just like, I just want to just express and be whatever it is that come out, you know, just go with it. And when I find even myself that I'm like, as much as I try to go outside a box of, not necessarily go outside a box, I just try to exist and be me completely mm-hmm. and let it flow. But then you're in situations where people try to bring you back to this area that they like and they're familiar with and they're comfortable with. And it is most frustrating. And then I don't put anything out. And then people are like, yo, what you been doing? I'm like, oh, come to my crib if you really want to know, because I've been doing things. I've been having fun.
But, yeah, that's what it's about.
So,
but, I mean, we creatures of habit. So, you know, most humans, you know, they want something they're familiar with. And I totally get that, man. But, you know, at the same time, people don't know what they want until they get it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, okay, I kind of dig this. You know, I think Steve Jobs said that best. You know, well, you can't really ask people what they want. You just got to give it to them. And then at that point, you know, they know they want it. And, you know, there's so many great artists that are giving people what they want, you know. You know, is it like, what's that great, that 70 songs, Gotta Give the People, Give the People
Got
What They
to
Want?
Give the people.
I think there should be like a second part to that chorus. You know what I mean? You can't give the people what they want sometimes, but sometimes you gotta give them some more, just a little bit more. And if they don't like it, you know, that's cool. I'm fine with people not liking it, mm-hmm. you know, because it's a lot of stuff I don't like. It's artists that I love that I don't like certain stuff they do.
True that.
So I'm fine with that, you know. It's kind of like, if somebody's liking everything you do, something is probably wrong. You know, probably. You know, something is wrong.
Going back to categories and Hey Ya and what it would have been if Mike had been on it, can you just talk about how Mike being on there would have changed the category?
People would have labeled it a rap song.
Right. And so why would that have been something that you didn't want to have happen with that particular song?
Because at the time, like, rap wasn't as interesting. And that whole album, I didn't rap a lot on it. And, you know, rap just wasn't feeding me at that time. And I knew, you know, that I wanted to go beyond it, like the songs that influenced me. I wanted to try just other things. And I knew if it had a rap on it, it would have, I mean, I know Killer would have killed it. But it's like, at that point, it would have been just another rap song, you know. But it's funny, when we put out Hey Ya, at one point we didn't even label it. We didn't even tell the radio who it was. Because if we would have put, you know, Outkast on it at first, it would have been judged differently. And I feel that way, you know, about if a rap was on it. You know, some people actually don't like rap. That's just the honest to God truth. You know, I've met people in the street that said, you know what, I really don't like rap, but I like Outkast. Mm. So, you know, it's kind of one of those kind of... It's one of those things where, you know, it's taste. That's what it is. You got to pick and choose, you know, when you're making a recipe. You know, you can put garlic in everything, but sometimes if you're going for a whole nother taste, you got to go all out, you know, and that alienates a few people, which that's, I'm fine with, you know, being alienated. But the goal, you know, the goal was to keep this certain kind of energy.
Ah, yeah. Well, it's my dad's favorite song of all time.
Ah, that's cool. Tell him I said what up.
I will. I can't believe you guys made 13th Floor Growing Old when you were so young.
Yeah.
How did you come to be, your whole crew, all of the Dungeon, so aware and responsible and kind?
It's hard to remember back on those times. I just know we would sit around and just talk all the time. It was really starting with sometimes conversation. And sometimes it may be, you know, Rico may have heard me say a rhyme, and I may have said something that stuck out to him, and he would pull that part. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, that part. You know, even like even the title AT Aliens, you know, that was from an earlier rhyme that I wrote, and I said something, and I said blah, 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 AT Alien. And Rico's like, ah, that word. You know, that's a dope word. And at that point, that became the album title. So it's kind of that thing, and I think with Growing Old, I think it may have started with, like, this chorus that was kind of raunchy, and I think Rico took it from there and made it bigger than what it was. It was something about fat titties turned to teardrops. I can't even remember the rhyme. I mean, that's embarrassing. You can't remember your own rhymes, but, you know, that was long ago. But I think he took those words and felt them in that way. And there was, I think, Ray was playing these chords, and it just came together.
Like memories of yesterday, day.
96 gon' be that. Yeah. 96 gon' be that. Yeah. 96 gon' be that.
I bet you never heard of a player with no game. Told the truth to get what I want, but shot it with no shame. Take this music dead serious while others entertain. I see they making they paper, so I guess I can't complain. Or can I? I feel they disrespecting the whole thing. Them hoax like selling dope to black folks, and I choke when the food they serving ain't tasting right. My stomach can't digest it even when I bless it. I'm confessing one more lesson from the side. We in the house tonight. Now who wants to oppose? Suppose we roll through hell and Andalo, and me and my niggas are past the flow and got down for eyes like high catches. My mind catches flashbacks to the black past, while my close niggas laugh at the southern slang. Finger waves and mojo chicken wings. I grew up on booty shake, we did not know no better things. So go ahead and diss it while real hard hippers listen. Started by African Bambada, so you and your partner gather your thoughts.
Something's gotta change.
Like it started, it all starts as like conversations, you know what I mean? And it goes from there.
Right.
So, you know, I think that maturity, or at that time, you know, Enrico and Ray, they're older than we are. So, you know, they may have heard something in it that, you know, at that age, we may not have even been into. But then, you know, when you get guidance, you go with it, you know. When we were that young, you know, Organized Noise and Ray, Enrico and Pat, they were really kind of like big brothers, and they really guided us a lot, you know, and were super influential in everything Outkast, you know, even helping me find my voice, you know, my rap voice, because I was coming from a young kid that was watching Redman and those guys and Dos Effects, and, you know, people act crazy. So I was like, well, I gotta rap as loud as they rap. And then one day, you know, I'm just in the studio on the microphone, and I'm sitting there, and I was just kind of talking, and Rico was in the control room. He's like, that's it right there. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, your normal talking voice is your rap voice. Mm-hmm. You know, so those kind of things help. And I think that song was Crumbling Herb when Reek did that. So it's kind of like those little pointers help you out, you know, when it comes to shaping you.
You know, are you familiar, I'm sure you are, with Rory?
Of course.
They have this thing where I think they have like this age limit on who's in their circle. Uh-huh. And you just said something about just, like, you know, your origins and the guys being older and that being, you know, instrumental and, I guess, guiding some of, you know, the ideas that you're putting out there. Could you speak a little bit to this idea of that, you know, those who are older can't really show you or teach you or give you anything new?
Oh, no, man, that is so wrong. That's completely wrong. It's that conversation thing. I think youthful energy, you know, youthful energy is gold, you know, but age and wisdom is like gold and diamonds, you know, put mm-hmm. together. So it's like an older person may not have the, you know, the same fire, you know, as he used to have, but, you know, he's been there. It's almost like a boxer that's older. You know, he's fought a lot of rounds, so he knows how to move, where to move. But someone that's younger may have the energy, right, you know, to keep up. So, you know, young cats, you can learn a lot from older dudes. But I can also say this. Sometimes old people are curmudgeons, and, you know, they can be set in their ways and stunt youthful growth, you know, because they just didn't go down that path. So even with my own son, I try to make sure I'm not teaching him a certain thing just because I was taught it. You know, I just try to make sure, well, is it right? Or, you know, it's kind of a hard balance to do because, you know, you want to have the experience guidance, but sometimes your experience may have been wrong. You know what I mean? That's just the truth. And I think with the youth, it's about, I think the old people really have to tell the youth that it's about y'all, man. And I think as artists, you know, don't worry about impressing the older cats. Don't do that, because the older cats, they're impressed when you're being as young and wild as you can be, because we were as young and wild as we could be. Like don't grow up too fast, you know. Don't grow up in it. Just don't try to impress the old people, you know. Be yourself, man. And I think it's the duty of all young artists to kind of, no disrespect, but to say, man, fuck y'all,
yeah,
the people that were before me, because that's what I would enjoy. To me, that keeps, no, honestly, that keeps the music going.
Yeah.
You know, if you got a whole bunch of people sitting around, you know, trying to be us, or, you know, trying to be A Tribe Called Quest, or trying to be Nas, or trying to be Jay-Z, you know, you can.
It gets boring.
Yeah, it gets boring, man. So you kind of, to me, it's about the progression of it. Like, we all learn from somebody. You know, it's almost like learning to speak. You know, when you first started talking, you sounded like your parents. You mm-hmm. formed letters. You said your ABCs because your parents sung them to you that way. Once you learn how to put letters together and then put words together and then put sentences together, you start to have your own language, you and your buddies. And that's kind of how it is with music. So at the same time, it's like, you know, you get these journalists and even other people in the industry that come down on young kids and say, oh man, he sound like Andre 3000, or he sound like this person. But the thing about it is, they just started.
Right.
You know what I mean? Give them time. So I always say, people who say that, I say, man, give them time. Give them time. We all sounded like somebody when we started. Even, you know, even Jimi Hendrix, they used to talk shit about him. They say, man, he's a fake ass B.B. King. Mm. That's what they used to say. But you got to give them time to kind of get into their own. That's, yeah, just get into your own, man.
Cool.
That's kind of what this movie is about, right? Is that moment.
Yeah.
Figures it out and does come into his own.
Yeah, I mean, it's once again, like we were talking about, the people around us when we were younger that helped make us. The Jimmy movie is really, that's the core of this movie, about his support system that was around, about the people that nurtured him. You know, Jimmy would not be who he was. No matter how great a guitarist he is, he would not be who he was if it wasn't for the young ladies around him, if it wasn't for the other bands, if it wasn't for The Who, if it wasn't for Clapton, if it wasn't for all the contemporaries around him, he would not be who he is. And I don't care how great you are. So it's I've learned, being in the industry, it ain't really about talent. You know, it's about, like, it's 90% feeling and timing and 5% talent, to be honest. Like, you can be the most talented person in the world, but if you ain't doing nothing with it and you're not connecting with the people, or you're not at that moment, it does not matter, you know. So, you know, the people around you, use your support system.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you.